If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by Pete and Steve. Pete, where have you been the last 2 weeks?
Oh, you know, just hiding from this virus.
Italy. I travel from Italy. Can you imagine if somebody just one super spread had been everywhere? Now, what happens? Yeah. I went to Iran, then I went to Italy, you know, and South Korea. It's just business, is all.
No, I was a couple of weeks down in Wuhan because the 5G.
Yeah.
Yes,
the 5G is cracking down there.
You imagine if somebody said, just completely unaware, said, you know, I had a business meeting in Wuhan, then I had a flight to South Korea, then Iran, then Italy. So, but I'm back now, it's all fine, it's all back to normal.
Did you know in Wuhan was the first city in the world to have 5G as like the trial? Now there's like conspiracy people out there trying to link it to 5G and the coronavirus.
I saw this guy on Twitter, right? He did a very excellent, detailed explanation with links to scientific papers. But he basically said, yeah, it's a man-made virus. You know, it's basically a couple of... That wet market is a couple of blocks away from this laboratory that they've created. It's very similar to HIV and SARS. And I'm just thinking, it's a power play by China. This is a test virus, you know? And the one they're going to actually release... will be taken because it's phenomenal, isn't it? This virus is phenomenal. It's like started in Wuhan and now it's affecting every single person. Pete, you are living in the coronavirus capital of the UK, Hazelmere. That started in Wuhan, but it's phenomenal, isn't it? Just the grip of fear that's got on the country. When in actual fact, in reality, unless you're 80 or older, you don't have to really worry about it, you know.
Well, to be fair, I think I'm not sure. I was watching Channel 5 News, which is randomly, I don't know why, but they were saying even on there, they were saying if you now just have mild symptoms of it, even if you are tested positive, they're just telling you to stay at home now. So I'm hoping that will kind of encourage people to go, it's not that bad if you're not ill.
Well, listen, no, it's not. Every day I look at the stats, update my spreadsheet, essentially, and you know, if you're 70 or older with a pre-existing health condition, you should worry. Everywhere else, don't really worry. In fact, in China, China, from first realizing there was something happening to peak was 6-7 weeks, right? So you're talking about December 31st, and then February 15, 17, pretty much, that was the peak. It started coming down now. But people say, yeah, but China shut it down, like martial law, they just shut every city down. Yes, but they weren't aware they had it. So it could have been going on for a month with people just passing it around crazily. Now, we're all aware it's about, so we are taking precautions. People are actually washing their hands, which is a good thing, you know. Which is, right. And even now, it's like, do you know what? I'm not joking. Megan's gone out to panic shopping. You know? Paddy said, I went into my local store, didn't he, Paddy? He said, Sainsbury's. Just a normal casual shop. All of a sudden, I saw people sort of buying stuff and then shelves were empty. And all of a sudden, you get turned into a panic buyer straight away. You become one of those problem buyers because you see someone buy a couple of packs of stuff. You're, right, I'm going to buy a couple of packs of stuff. Why should I be left out?
I don't.
Isn't it really random that it's toilet paper that's getting...
I just saw Twitter now. Just logged on Twitter. And someone just... wipes as a question mark. Next to me, I said, what's that about? I realised I posted it earlier on. I said to my Megan, right? I said, listen... And I'm always... we got an attic right in the house. And I said, always... When you're in the supermarket, always buy toilet roll. Always. Doesn't matter what you're getting. If you don't need any, just get toilet roll. We're never going to stop going for number two, unless you're dead. You know, so always going to need it. As we've got an attic, we can lag the attic with it. Doesn't matter. It'd be good. It'll keep the heat in. Just piles it. So I've said to Megan the last couple of days, because I saw a report about Australia, because obviously they're close to China, there's a lot of important exports, and they've been running out of toilet paper. And I said, Megan, last couple of days she's gone out actually to buy tin stuff. And I said, get toilet roll, yeah? And she laughed at me last 2 times. I said, what are you laughing at? Toilet roll. We always going to need toilet roll. It's never going to stop. You're never going to stop wiping your backside, are you? It's not a hobby or a fad. It's always going to be there. And literally, today she decided to check it out. In Asda, she took a picture, said, come on FaceTime. Go on FaceTime. I said, what do you mean? She showed me the toilet roll aisle. Empty. I lost my temper nearly. I told you, did I say? I mean, she lost three times. Why are you buying toilet roll? So I don't care about tin carrots. I don't care. So anyway,
that is insane. That I just do not understand any of this panic buying.
Panic in general.
Or so, anything. I'm not influenced by other people. I don't really care if they're panic buying. They're mental.
I know. It is mental. Because the thing is, that panic buying... you go in a casual shop, you see someone panic buying, you become a panic buyer. You become part of the problem.
I just look at that person and go, you are nuts.
All I wanted was toilet roll.
I think Paddy's down to his last two rolls, so I feel so.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, but people said to you, Megan said to me, we'll just go in the shower. I said, I do not want to have to shower every time I want to poo. She said, well,
you'll be very clean at the end of the day.
Use a sink. Use a sink. I said, you're the most hygienic person I know. You're a really clean freak. You would not like me wipe my backside in the sink after a poo. And then then Steve said on our WhatsApp group, said, do you know what? It turns out in Cardiff, all the posh toilet roll is still here. And I said, yeah. I said, Steve, well, you may have to go posh for a while, suffering style. He said, well, I did about 3 months ago. He said, it was your roll that made me change, actually. Always enjoyed having a poo at your house.
Can I just say, this is a new low for the podcast, yeah. Isn't it?
Well,
it's pretty good because our portfolios are all at all time lows.
It's definitely below the belt. Anyway. But do you know what? I've got a cracking analogy. You're going to love this, right?
This is the one you mentioned that you're filming up to.
First of all, let me say, if you listen to this podcast and you are an investor, I'm going to keep saying this every time down the podcast. Funds. Right? If you're a private investor, a part-time investor, you should have the percentage of your age in exposure to funds, well-diversified, low-cost funds, mostly dividend-paying, like Vanguard, stuff like that. That's what you should. And you should pay into those on a monthly basis as often as you can. They could afford on a monthly basis is often. But I mean, this is a time right now in funds you should be really investing. And this is, you get an average cost dollar, they call it. But I mean, really get, because... The stock market and the last, I've been going spreadsheet crazy recently, but the stock market over the last 150 years or whatever, it's basically returned around about 8 to 10% every year. It's the best way to do it, and all you need to do is pay, on average, into a fund. It's probably the easiest, laziest way to build up your wealth over long term. So you should always have that as a backbone to your portfolio. And I suggest if you're a private investor, have that percentage. What I mean by that is, say, if you're 40 years of age, you should have about 40% in funds, like Vanguard and whatever. And in fact, if you look on the audio boom right now, below where we're talking, I'll put a list of my funds, but there's loads of funds out there. But go for low-cost, well-diversified funds. So that's first and foremost. And you should, like I said, now is the time. Did I say this, Steve? How many times have I said this? When you see on the mainstream news, when you see the stock markets have sold off, that's the time to start scaling into funds, because you will outperform your regular investor who's generally selling. People start selling on down days. And if I also posted a tweet recently about if you miss... the best 10 days of the stock market, your returns are halved pretty much. And oddly, the best 10 days normally occur within, 1 or 2 days or weeks within the best worst days, because you get a down day, an irrational sell-off, and it bounces. And it's happened recently, really, really random. So what you should be doing on these down days is topping up, on those funds, and then you get outperform everyone else anyway. But
this is the big question. I'm sure a lot of people listening to this and listening to your podcast every day are kind of asking this question, and it's because we're seeing this kind of tumbling of it was a little bit of a rally at the start of the week and then it tumbled again. You're saying sort of scaling gradually over the next few weeks, or because for me, last 2-3 weeks, I haven't bought or sold anything.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about funds. I'm not talking about these small cap, really high risky plays. Because in this environment, you don't know how far this could go, and I'll go into this now. I'm talking about the Vanguard Life Strategy Fund is one of those funds I think I hold, you hold maybe. But if you look at it, it holds it's about 160 stocks, 160 different, within that is funds, but it, no, in fact, it's about 2,000 stocks it holds in it, and that's diversified around the world. So you're basically investing in the stock market rather than just putting it in a bank for 1%. You're investing in entire equities around, you know, big companies around the world, so from emerging markets. So, you know, you will get a decent return of that over the long term. So those that you can't get with one purchase, you're instantly diversified. I'm not talking about going crazy on a small cap stock that just has questionable potential, but you believe it does. I'm talking about sort of diversified funds here. They're very safe sort of, you know. I don't know why this isn't taught in schools. It's putting your money in a bank is ridiculous. You're getting like 1% at the moment. That doesn't beat inflation. When in actual fact, if you invest into one of these funds, you are investing in that bank that you put your money into, you know? And it's a massive fund. So, so this is what I want to talk about. Sort of investing, right, is about risk and reward, isn't it, right? Now, there's two different kinds of risks. And this is what I often say about gambling versus investing. There's known risks, and which are known knowns, and unknown unknowns, and known unknowns. Now, it sounds quite complicated, right? First of all, the coronavirus was an unknown unknown. It came from nowhere. You know, we didn't know it was going to happen. It's called a black swan event, right? But when you invest, there are risks, sort of known risks or known knowns. So they are like debt of a company, cash, jurisdictions that company's in, pre-guessing, outcomes, overexposing. Those are risks, okay? Those are known unknowns. You can avoid those. And so you don't need to expose yourself to any more kind of, unknown risks than that. So if you can manipulate those risks, the reward is there for you, right? And then it's like the coronavirus, black swan event, comes out of left field. Markets took a while for it to wake up to it. Because I was talking for a while with Glenn, about 2-3 weeks on the podcast, saying, why isn't the markets moving about coronavirus? It didn't move. And then all of a sudden, we had a bit of an explosion in, I think it was Italy, wasn't it, South Korea. People didn't care about the Far East, actually. I think it was basically Italy. And then people thought, oh, hang on a sec. It's in a country we're sort of familiar with, Italy. And then it started tumbling, you know? Now we've got the stage now where we're going from an unknown unknown, which was the coronavirus, to a known unknown. So we know that it's going to affect the economy, but we don't know how deep, right? And this is the analogy you're going to love. This is the analogy, right?
We'll be the judge of that.
Yeah, okay. It's contagion. There's two levels of contagion here. The coronavirus has two types of contagion, right? It's creating both. First of all, there's biological contagion, right? And there's economic contagion. See, there's a similarity here. So basically, we know it's largely fatal to everyone over 70, right, with pre-existing health conditions. So the difference between biological and economic contagion is when a person dies. Say, for example, that person, it wasn't Hazelmere, was it, Pete, that person died, was it, or not?
No.
Okay.
Berkshire.
Okay, well, don't go, like I said on WhatsApp, don't go snogging old age pensioners. I know it's a hobby of yours. You go overnight and start to...
Yeah, that's going to ruin your weekends, isn't it?
It is. I know. So you got the biological and economic, right? So a person dies, they will no longer transmit the virus. So there and then, that contagion ends. With economic contagion, it's not the same. For example, Flybe, okay? This is a company that's had problems for a long time, debt. All right? It's had debt problems up to its eyeballs, and they couldn't clear that debt. But when that company goes through or goes bust, the contagion doesn't stop. Because first and foremost, you have 2,000 employees that will be tightening their belts. They won't be spending as much as they normally do. So those 2,000 people, will have an effect on the local economy. All right? Then you've got the debt itself, the bank, or whoever holds that debt. That's now coming up a bad loan on their books. They have to write that off. So their earnings will underperform because that or won't do as well. So then they can loan less money out because obviously you have to, loan within certain covenants. You can't go above a certain ratio. So they loan less money out and that will stop new businesses getting loans. So that the contagion economically carries on, and if you look right now, like even you said, Steve, ITV have come out recently saying there are less, if you look on the adverts on TV anywhere, January, February, March, they're mainly, or majority of those adverts are like holiday companies, you know? Right now, there is no point holiday companies advertising. They're just throwing good money after bad. They're already, you know, against the wall. They're already having problems. People are not travelling, full stop. There's no point advertising because until they can see the end of this problem. You know? So you've got ITV taking a hit, Facebook, social media taking a hit. So this is what the contagion is. So we know there's going to be economic hit here, okay? We don't know how big it is. That's the problem. So we know there's a risk. How big is the risk? So in my mind, until you can get some kind of, you know, foresight, some kind of close on that, don't invest anymore. And in fact, Pete came up with a saying, I use it here, until we see less patients, as in people with the disease, have patience. Because I think, I'm doing this spreadsheet every day, and I'm seeing rest of the world now. It was the first day, actually, on Friday, where I thought, oh, hang on, this is going to be a problem here. Because it was growing almost, not exponentially, I hate to say that, but it was growing quite big. And I thought, right, until we see a definite trend where cases reported aren't increasing in Europe, rest of the world, outside China, because they are decreasing in China, then I wouldn't bother even, you know, going in back into the market.
Sorry, did you say they are decreasing in China?
They are decreasing in China, yes.
All right, okay.
So, but even then, so what you're going to have is that. So the first bullish signal I think we'll see is when... We say, okay, listen, for like 2-3 days now, we've had cases reported in the rest of the world going down. This is, seems like a start of a trend. That's good. And if you look at like China, the first cases reported on December 31st, and then 15th to 17th of February, the peak happened. So from first reporting to peak was about 6-7 weeks. People will say again that, China was good that they closed down cities. Yeah, but they didn't know they had it for a while. We now know it's about, so we're more careful, hopefully. So... it could be the same, could be a bit more, could be less. But I mean, so I'm saying, what, when was ours started? It was only last week or 2 weeks ago, wasn't it, when we started reporting the rest of the world? So it's going to be end of this month, start of middle of April, you know, at least until we see peak. But until then, I take your time. And not only that, if this economic contagion happens, then it will expose the weakness. Like I said, this is the similarity between, you know, coronavirus as a virus biologically. It exposes weakness. So if you're old and you have a pre-existing health condition, it'll take you down, it'll kill you. Same with economic, you know, contagion. If you are a weak business with debt, it'll take you down. But the trouble is with business, businesses are interlinked. You know, they've got people who work for them, they have, you know, who pay them, who stimulate the economy, they've got loans and debts, they're all reliant on each other. So we don't know how far this is going to go yet. So I would say to people, hold your horses. Don't start. If you've got cash ready to invest, wait. Wait until you see those new cases reported, rest of the world, plateaus at least, and then starts climbing down. Then what you'll have then anyway is, a couple of months, weeks later, is companies coming out with, you know, lower guidance, the revenue's gone down, hopefully that's a temporary blip. But, you know, you don't know what... structural weaknesses it'll expose in the economy. You don't know whether who will suffer next, because they were saying there's a load of low carrier airlines in Southeast Asia. No one's flying on. They have lots of debt, low margins. They could just fall like a house of cards. Loads of them, you know. So, yeah, wait, isn't it? Just wait and see what happens. Don't jump in. Never rush in. Never rush out. You know what I'm saying?
Well, absolutely, and that's why I haven't done that, and that's why I'm like people. As much as they're panic buying toilet roll, investors that have obviously been panic selling lots of stocks in the last couple of weeks.
I know.
Do you reckon it's people selling? Obviously, there could be some stupid people out there obviously selling. But do you think it's just mainly people selling, knowing that it's going to fall back? Knowing that they can then buy in at a lower price.
Yeah. People panic. They look at the stock market.
That's not panic. That's quite clever, really, isn't it?
Well, no, because they don't. I tweeted, I'll send you, I don't know if I find the tweet, but it's pretty much every bad, really big sell-off down day. Dow Jones Industrial Average, right? I don't know what it's like today. It's like down about 500 points. But yesterday, it was down 971 points, right? Down 3.6%. Day before, it was up 1,100 points. Day before that, it was down 785 points. That's 2.9%. Day before that, up 1,200 points, 5%. Last 2 weeks before that, down 13%. So these, we are at the moment, the bulls are fighting the bears here. And like I said, the stock market and everyone, you know, the default movement of the stock market is to go up because businesses want to improve their profits. People invest in their business want it all to go, you know, get better. So when you do have a sell-off, it's like trying to push a ball underwater. There'll be resistance. But if you've got enough pressure going down, it will happen, you know. So again, it doesn't last for long. As I scraped this sort of website of corrections and bear markets from since 1928. There's been 53 corrections of bear markets since 1928, which was the massive crash. The average pull down is 23%. The average duration is about 207 days. So it doesn't last for long because it's against what everyone wants, isn't it? The majority of people want businesses to do well, the government stimulate, you know, everything tries to help businesses. So, you know, it tends to go up. But when you get these downturns, it can be very... And the thing with bear markets, they're very volatile. So the up weeks can last for. And that's why no one can ever spot a bear market, because everyone thinks it's hunky-dory after a couple of rises, but then it goes down again quickly. So you get these, you know, aggressive moves down, aggressive moves up, and then down again. But so a correction is like 10%, bear market is over 20%. But you know what? Oddly, last summer, the yield curve was indicating a recession was, you know, going to happen. And then normally when that happens, the yield between the 3 months and 10-year note, when that happens generally, it takes about 18 months to kick in. And so that's the back end of 2020. So what we could have here is, like, you know, we need sell-off because the American market is an all-time high. When you get that level, valuations are stretched. You know, companies have to earn a certain amount of profit to justify that valuation, and they haven't. The price-earnings ratio, for example, a very well-known metric, the E in the earnings has been coming down, so making the stock market look quite expensive. And so it has to have a sell-off. And do you know what? The way to earn good money is to let it sell off and then find the level and then build again, because at a certain level it gets too frothy and you can't go any higher. So the odd thing is, why I love the stock market is very simple. The oldest adage is this, isn't it? Buy low, sell high. But the thing is, when it's high, sentiment is very bullish. Everyone's, oh, stock market, yeah. That's when you should be selling, because valuations are stretched. When the stock market is selling off like this, most people want to sell. And they sell on a horrible down day and then realize next day it rallies quickly. But your instinct should be to buy, you know, because the prices are cheaper, you know, the valuations are cheaper. If that company is earning the same kind of revenue next year, then it's cheaper. So you get a bargain. So that's why it's so hard. It's a simple concept like that. It's very hard to do, isn't it?
But we've been talking for a long time about global downturn or whatever, and I've been moving more into cash and having a higher proportion of my portfolio in cash.
Steve and Paddy haven't, have they?
Have they not? No.
Have you, Steve?
What? Steve?
Steve's fallen asleep, I think. Steve, are you still there?
Yeah, sorry, what did you say?
Yeah, why are you all sounding all odd? Pete has moved into cash a little bit. He's been feeling the market. I said the other day, Steve, this is the time to start buying more of your fund, because you will not automate. You will not automate your buys on the fund. I automate. I've been even really topping up my funds in the big sell-offs. I've been topping up 10% a day, pretty much, 10% of the exposure.
The problem is I don't have a regular income, so my money goes up and down and things. So when I'm not making money, I tend not to want to be pulling out the money which I don't really have and putting it into funds. Whereas when I have money, I'll put it in. So it's not about that. I do take the mic a little bit about the manual thing, but I would do automatic if I was having regular money into my bank every day, but every month. But I don't, so that's why I do it.
Yeah, I know. But is there a certain minimum amount you can? I mean, if you took my tenner a month, no, it's not worth it. But is there a minimum amount you can, you know, sort of say, okay, this is, I always got that amount sitting in the account somewhere.
If I could, £12.
Yeah, but because even now you can switch off and forget about it and let the automation, you know. There's a lady on the road here, Vanessa, whose daughter's in school with Fred, my older son, and she asked me about investments and all this stuff, and I told her the best thing to do is funds.
And now she hates you.
Yeah, the best thing to do is funds. She sent me a screenshot, but you know, about a week ago. I said, what's happening? Because she started about four months ago, and I said, and all she's in is funds, you know. I said this, right, start buying. So what do you mean? And I said to her at the time, I said, when you see on mainstream media the stock markets are selling off, that's when you need to be buying these funds. Really is.
When you see her walking up the garden path, you just hide. You're like, oh my gosh, quick hide! We're not here!
There's nobody in! She even texted me, she brought from South Africa, she was. She texted me, what's happening? I said, you get these. If you look, right? If you look. Let me get my one of the spreadsheets up, and I'll get you stats on corrections of beer markets. And it's literally, if you just waited, you could just wait. In fact, we said this last week while you were away, Pete, but you could just wait. There's a correction pretty much every year, 10% correction. And if you just waited and topped up on that and didn't do anything else, on funds, it says, you know, then you could...
Exactly. So rather than doing your automated monthly, quarterly, whatever, you could just wait and then put it.
But we don't know. I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, if you are like Gleb, you say, right, you look at your fund. If you say, keep it simple. I have one fund, like the strategy fund, right, the Vanguard strategy fund, regular low cost. And you've been you bought into it, and all of a sudden it's 10% down. Put some more in. If it drops 10% again, put some more in again. Because you know what? Over the long term, like the last 10 years, you know, it's done over 100%. You know, and so you're quite safe. You pay dividends, all that. So, so basically, there's 636 days in between corrections and bear markets. That's the average. Wow. Right. So what is that? Just over a year and a bit.
Two years.
18 months, pretty much. Yeah, nearly 2 years. Yeah. 365. Yeah. So it'll happen once, pretty much. You know, every 18 months. I mean, that's not. I even did a chart. Look at this.
See, but like looking on the other side, like say for example, I did have a couple of grand. The way I looked at the other day, so I was thinking, oh, can I scratch together a bit of money out? Which probably not the best idea. You know, because I always like to keep a bit of money in my actual bank. But then
this make-believe bank.
Yeah, exactly.
Harry.
But then I was thinking, okay, if I put £2,000 in, if that 10% comes back, that's only £200. I don't say only £200, £200, isn't it? But it's not life changing, is it? So if I miss that 10% on that grand or two, it's not really the end of the world, is it?
No, but these funds are your pension pots. You know, that's why I treat them. So someone said to me on Twitter today, he sold all his funds. I said, why do you do that? I mean, to me, they are my pension. I mean, like I said, you can mess around with individual stocks, right? But you can have these at the backbone of your portfolio, and over long term, you're guaranteed pretty much guaranteed over long term, the stock market will return you 8 to 10% over the long term. So you talk, cumulative is amazing. You know, it's like, you know, 200%, and so you will not get that in a bank. If you got spare cash, it's about return, isn't it? Where else are you going to get a return?
Yeah. The other thing is, in that example, it's the power of compounding as well, in terms of reinvesting the dividend as well. So I know what you're saying, Steve, the £200 or whatever, but it's actually over the long term.
Yeah, but my point is, like, you're obviously saying, like, chuck it in now. And obviously, there's that panic now, and I wish I did have some spare money, but I don't now. But maybe in 5 or 6 months, when that 10% has come back, I will have money to put back in there. But then I'm not going to worry, because actually I would have only made a couple hundred quid if I'd had the money now rather than in 5-6 months, which, you know, so it is a long game, but, and that's the way it works for me. I put in chunks when I've got work, you know, I've had quite a lot of work on, and it pays off. And then when it's quiet, it is now at the moment, you know, I don't tend to have money spare to throw in there.
Whatever cash you've got in your portfolio, the percentage of it will be increasing every day at the moment, because the portfolio value is tumbling.
Yeah.
So that's really positive. So you might have had 10% last week, but now you've got 20%.
What have you got? So do you got any spare cash in your portfolio? I mean, poof.
I think I've got about 20p or something like that.
Okay. And that's about 40% of your portfolio.
I thought you were moving into cash a few. Yeah, I thought you were moving into cash a few months ago, Steve, when we were talking about it. Because I mean, for me, it's like, yeah, a global downturn, recession's going to come. Now coronavirus is kind of preempted all of this, and perhaps then we'll tumble into a massive global downturn now because of it. I don't know.
I think I thought about it at one point, but then there's the other part side of me going, pretty much what Justin was saying, is like, it's almost when it's sitting in cash, it's almost just not doing anything. So I'd rather put it into the fund. So I did have a couple of grand sitting in cash, but then I ended up putting it into the Vanguard, which, you know, in hindsight, I wish I hadn't, and could have put it in there now, but there we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Steve, do you know what then? Mm. If you are, like you say, you know, you are self-employed, your earnings are irregular, you know? But if you can put a little bit away and you'd like to have some in your bank, wait for the corrections.
How about doing mail escort work?
Yes, when I say I've got money in my bank, that's like money to pay bills. Because, as I said, if you have a quiet couple of months where I don't actually make any money, which it does happen once or twice a year, I need a couple of grand.
Yeah, I'm saying, I'm not just saying just check that from the start. If you need to pay bills, yes. What I'm saying is, okay, don't automate it, but get into your head, hardwire into your head, when you see, six, I don't know what news channel you watch, but if you see on the mainstream media about the stock market, you say, oh, hang on, have I got any spare change to chuck into my fund? That's what you should think. And do you know what? It's not so much as in that day, It's almost like for a week or so and then put some in. But that
it was really bad timing because I had a really busy time by Christmas, so I had quite a lot, and I did chuck a load into the Vanguard in like January, February. I can't remember what it was now. So it was just bad timing, wasn't it?
Yeah. Listen, I'm going to do... I've completely changed my entire portfolio, pretty much. Like I said, I talked about this previously about it, the risk profile of a portfolio. Because, and I'm going to do a video. I've done a video for ages because I've changed a little bit. And I think now I don't know whether we're going to go from a correction into a bear market. I don't know which is another 10% down, and we may do. So, in my mind, in that situation, It's very important to have companies that are generating cash. And I thought about this long and hard, right? What makes the share price go up? What makes a sustained rise in the share price? I don't want to jump in and out. I want to invest in a good business that'll sustain, And I've thought about this a long time. I thought about, value generation and all that stuff. And so I'm going to be highlighting a couple of stocks I believe, you never can tell. I've shown you spreadsheets of... I've come up with a spreadsheet for basically growth, value, health, and efficiency. It'll evaluate any company on those three things. And to me, the most important thing is growth. And I've looked over the most successful stocks the last 5-10 years, and they've all had excellent revenue and profit growth. And in fact, revenue comes first, then profit comes later. And to a certain extent, you can not so worry about the valuation or the efficiency. Because if they're getting huge demand for their product, then it's going to be a very successful company. But I do put that in it anyway because you don't want to sort of start investing in a company that has debt at its eyeballs. Because debt is like, do you know what? There's people investing in a company called at the moment Eddie Stobart Logistics. Now it's not part of the Stobart. Well, it's a spin-off, really. But it's Eddie Stobart Logistics now have debt pretty much four times their valuation, market cap. They're making a loss, and people are punting it like crazy. It's one of the most followed stocks on Vox Markets for the last 2 weeks, and I'm thinking, why? What? When there's so many companies out there, genuine companies, earning money with no debt, generating value. Why are you punting a stock in this environment? You could wake up like Flybe, like Thomas Cook, could basically say, "Oh, we've gone through," and so. So basically, that's why I make sure I do a health check on a company. It doesn't have much debt. It's growing. It's efficient as well. So I've looked at companies that have outperformed, in fact, massively performed in the last 5 years. They've been 10 baggers for the last 5 years. And this is not a volatile sort of shoot-up, shoot-down stocks. These are companies that are 10 bagged and are still growing. And they've all got these things in common. And so I'm trying to find the next 10 baggers, but sustained 10 baggers. And like I said, I've sent you a couple of shots. And I did top up, actually, on Friday night, by 10 minutes before closing, on three stocks. I don't know if it's going to be the ones. I'm not going to mention them, because I don't want to get into the game anymore of just tipping stocks. I will mention them on my weekend video. But I'm going to go through, first and foremost, what I think is risk, what you should be doing in your portfolio, how structured you should be. And that's, like I said, having funds equal to your age, percentage-wise. And then how you should expose yourself for other stocks. And also looking at, I'll share that spreadsheet where you can basically type all the figures in. It takes a while because I basically type every figure in it. When you get a company, and do you know what? Only buying after you come up with financial results, because figures don't lie, do they? CEOs will always tell you it's going to go well. They'll always say that. They'll always say that. But figures don't lie. So don't believe a CEO who says he's going to 10 bag, 5 bag, whatever, because of course he's going to say that. But believe the figures, There's been companies who lied in their financial statements, so they can lie as well. But the financial statements, the figures, are less likely to lie than the actual CEO itself, So I'm now only going to rely on figures. That's it. That's it. That, to me, that makes sense, doesn't it? If a company's working, if it's growing, yeah. the figures will show it, won't they?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. But then that is that whole thing of that's a more sensible and predictable approach, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rather than the boom or bust of the small unpredictable stocks.
So ironically, so I've got 19 companies I hold, right? I mean, of those 19 companies, I think three have yet to produce a financial statement showing they're making a profit, but that's fine because within my spreadsheet, I've got room for three companies that are maybe loss-making at the moment. The rest of them are not. The rest of them are sort of making a profit. They're actually generating value. So to me, what do you think? I mean, if I asked you, if someone said to you, so what makes the stock price rise, the share price rise? What would you say, Pete Steve? What would you say?
Hype.
Well, yeah. For a lot of smaller stocks, it's hype.
Yeah.
It's performance, isn't it? And performance or hope of performance.
Yes, exactly. I just think that, I think that's it. It's basically, it's a performance. What is performance, though? What is performance? Mm. What is that? What's performance?
Money, profit, revenue.
Exactly. That's what comes down to, isn't it?
Mm.
What's a successful business? A business that was generating money, cash, at the end of the day. There's the old saying, isn't it? Revenue is vanity, profit is sanity, cash is king.
Yeah.
But if you're pre-revenue, because you've got companies that... for a while, I started off in big caps, and I come down to small caps and micro caps, and I realised there's a certain, you can do well in small cap, micro cap stocks that are pre-revenue, hope, hype, potential. But I realise, hang on, when it comes down to it, a share price rises because a company is generating value. What's value? And then what is value? And then value is actually cash. If you are generating cash, you are selling a product or service for a profit. That means you've got a margin there. And so what you're selling, what you're actually expending on cash, you are taking more in than you're spending out. That is value. Then you're generating proper value. And if you can continue to do that, and you are building your cash pile, and you can invest more if you want to because you're actually bringing more cash in than you are. That's value generation. Now, the hope of value generation can also happen. So when you get small cap companies come online, say, first, or the list, say, we're in a market that's worth billions and we can take a big chunk of this market, and they release a bit of good news, and then the share price spikes up, but comes back down because it's not sustainable because they're not generating the value. That's just an insight into what they can generate, So I want to actually invest in companies that can generate value for a long term. And companies like Boohoo, JD Sports, look at I have 10 companies that fit this watch list I looked at. And they all had this one thing in common, that was increased revenue year over year, pretty much. Compound annual growth and net profits year over year, compound annual growth. And so I filter for that now. I said, do you know what? I'm not going to look at a company that's not making money and not expanding their revenue, who's not expanding their profits, because that's where the true winners are. If you want to sit there for 10 years and almost just, and all of a sudden, if you see a couple of years of downturns in the revenue, sell. But in the meantime, you probably earn a good chunk of cash, So, yeah. 10 baggers.
As we stand now, or sit here, or wallow here, with over the next few weeks, we don't know what's going to happen, but most of us are probably seeing a massive sea of red in our portfolio. What's your game plan? You're scaling into...
I bought a couple of this on Friday. Yeah.
What other elements are there to your game plan in the next two, three weeks?
I'm 42, 43% cash. I have 5% in a Vanguard strategy fund, or not 5%, just below that. So I've... But what I aim to do is this.
Are you looking for the coronavirus to level off a bit in terms of daily cases or whatever? And
Yeah. I'm still going to hold a lot. I want to stay on 40% cash. So I've got 5% in gold, ETF, which is okay. So it's rallying gold. But all I'm using that as a hedge. I don't know. You're not going to earn a huge amount of profit, even if it goes to 2,000.
You're making a hedge out of gold.
Yeah. I know. Quite flash.
Wow.
I know. So that's a hedge, pretty much. If the stocks go down, hopefully gold will go up. But I've got three funds, which are like Emerging Market Fund, Vanguard. I've got Vanguard Life Strategy and Vanguard Dividend Paying Fund. I want to get to about 5% each exposure in that, so it's 20%. I've got 40%, over 40% in cash, so that's 60%. So I've only got, you know, 40% less than that, pretty much about 35% in stocks at the moment.
With that gold ETF, because you've been buying that, you bought it on a few occasions in the past few months.
Yeah.
And then it dipped and then it rallied the price of gold anyway.
There's no doubt gold will go higher, isn't it?
Yeah.
All central banks can do is now, most central banks are at zero. All they can do is print cash. That means they'll devalue currencies. Gold will be a safe haven asset. So, you know, even the American, you know, America's economy is strongest in the world. They are lowering their interest rate. They're printing money and pumping money into the system. That is good for gold and silver. So, you know, it's a long-term thing. Go on, sorry.
Yeah, my question was, so you've been buying into that in the last few months, whatever. So overall, what's your gain or loss on that? Where are you with that ETF?
I'm only about sort of 5% up on gold.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
No, the reason I ask, I haven't bothered to do any of that, and I just want to see how much I've missed out on.
Do what annoyed me though? I was quite bearish. Like, but I was 60% in cash my year back. I think I was very bearish, and I realised I underperformed because of that. But I did buy a gold ETF then, but I got bored with it and I sold it. And that was when I was up at $1,200, $1,300, and now it's like $1,700 pretty much, or close to, which annoyed me. And that's one thing, patience is, you know.
Patience before patience.
Yeah, patience before patience, see? And that's it. So when we see that patience thing, that's the time to go nuts. You know, if you've got spare cash.
Patience are dropping. The patients are dropping. The deaths are levelling. The patients are dropping. Yeah. That's the time to start buying stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, good.
Is there anything else worth saying?
Just look after yourself, self-isolate.
I've been doing that for ages.
Yeah, I know, most of your life.
So coronavirus contagion economically is a bigger worry to most people than it is biologically, you know? I mean, so we don't know how far the economic impact this will be. So just, you know, sit still, wait for patience. Go down, get before your patience, whatever.
I'm surprised, coronavirus seems to have gone viral.
Yeah, that's reality. It is amazing though, isn't it? How a small little thing, people said to me, you know, people mentioned it a couple of times. I said, well, listen, hang on. Yeah, but China did very well. They really locked it down. I said, yeah, but... And someone said, you wait till it gets to London, someone said. I said, well, you started in Wuhan, you fool. Wuhan's bigger than London. it's like 50 cities in China. Well, yeah. If you go on Google, right, on Wikipedia, Wiki, and just check out cities in China. And there's like 20 of them you've never heard of. They're like bigger than Birmingham. It's like, you know, what? And so, you know, the scale over there is different level. Really is. Yeah. It's like they got 1.4 billion, 1.5 billion people. The rest of the world is 5.5. They are a fifth. I always like that Tim Vine gag. You ever heard of that?
Well, I don't know until you tell me.
He said, do you realise that one in five people in the world...
That's not Tim Vine, that's a Tommy Cooper gag.
No, it wasn't. Sure. Really? No, he said, one in five people in this world is Chinese. Now, there's five of us siblings. He said, I don't know who it is. It's either me, Kevin, John, Sharon, or Sun Yi.
I think it might be Kevin. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it might be Kevin.
Sure, Tommy Cooper did a similar thing, but anyway, okay.
He's dead now, so Tommy Cooper, you know, coronavirus.
Not. Yeah, that's right, so should we just wrap up today's podcast and talk about the rugby?
I think we should call the rugby off, actually. I just genuinely think...
I was thinking that.
I think some of the Welsh team, you know, we were very popular in Japan, and then we went over there, mingled too much, and I think we're feeling a bit ill. We're definitely not on form, are we? Definitely not on form at all. I think just call it off for now. It's a farce. So everything's,
take the ball home. Yeah. Oh, okay. Right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's fine. Well, let's see what happens in this weekend.
Well, it's obviously that the Welsh are very ill at the moment, and a fair play for them to crack on with it, you know. But
that's good of them.
It is really good of them. I really think that's amazing of them because I think they should self isolate. You know.
Yeah. Okay. But if you win, you'll be all over it like a rash,
like a virus. Yeah. Okay.
Well, good luck.
Have it. What time is it, Yang Shimo? What time is it? Whatever time is it?
Quarter to five.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Saturday afternoon. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Lovely. Have a nice weekend, boys.
Bye.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.